This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Wisconsin has seen a warmer winter this year, with many parts of the state seeing a lot less snow than we're used to. The abnormal warmth has produced the lowest average ice cover across the Great Lakes in the last 50 years. If you've been hoping for a more wintry winter, the weather forecast has some good news for you, with heavy snow expected for a large part of the state and colder temperatures also on the horizon. We're checking in on why this winter has been mild so far and what we're in store for in the coming days. Later, we'll hear from a reporter about how the weather's been creating challenges for outdoor recreation and tourism here in the state. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about this year's winter weather in Wisconsin? Are you glad to see snowfall and some colder temperatures on the way? Have you been happy with a warmer winter so far? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Chad Franzen is a meteorologist at WSAW-TV in Wausau. Chad, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Rob. How are you doing today on this Monday?
I'm pretty good. Getting ready for some snow myself, Chad. Now, my perception, and I think a lot of people's perception, is it's been a pretty mild winter so far. First of all, in terms of temperatures, can you put some numbers on the reality? Has it, in fact, been pretty mild?
Yeah, in fact, temperatures have been pretty much all above average since the first day of December. So you're talking almost 40 days now of temperatures, average high anyway, above normal. And then you think back to the last time we had the biggest snowfall in Wausau, we have to go back to Halloween, where we had a whopping 2.2 inches of snow, and it's been anything but since. So far this season, Wausau is under 7 inches of snow, and we should have picked up close to 20 by now. So, and that really exists for a good portion of the state as well. Rhinelander is under 13 inches of snowfall for the season and should have had well over 25 inches at this point. So we're going to get back at it this week and get back to a very typical winter weather pattern and get our first shot of the Arctic air coming up later this week as well.
Yeah, before we dig into what's happened, well, it's going to be hitting, I guess, southwestern Wisconsin already tonight. But before we get to that, Chad, what has been moderating our weather so far this winter?
Well, we've been under the influence of a very strong El Nino since early in the spring. And when the temperatures in the ocean, this is the Pacific Ocean that we're really watching along the equator, the temperatures are unusually warm, and that is giving us the milder weather pattern. When we get the air masses coming in off of the Pacific Ocean, those are very warm and modified air masses compared to when we typically get a what we call a continental polar type air mass coming in from the northwest. So that has been the one thing that we have been lacking, is the cold air push. If you think about it, we've had more days with a lot of cloud cover and some drizzle and fog and stuff like that since the middle of December, and we haven't had a whole lot of bright sunshine filled days ever since that time as well. So we've been in that kind of milder weather pattern. And now in the last couple of days, last week, in fact, we had a little bit of what's called a sudden stratospheric warming event. And what that really did is allow for a break off of this cold Arctic air to come sliding down the eastern slopes of the Rockies. So that's what we'll be looking at later this week. And usually when you get these kind of weather pattern changes, they take several days to happen. And in that process of the several days is when you get the clash of the air masses. In the summertime, this would be thunderstorms. In the wintertime, the clash of the air masses is where we're going to end up with snow. And then the question is, are we all snow or do we see a mixture? And for this next storm system coming up tomorrow, this is all a snow event. And this will be the heaviest snowfall we've had this season. But keep in mind, the biggest snowfall total since the beginning of the fall and winter season last fall was only 2.2 inches on Halloween. So it's not going to be hard to beat that.
And that just reminded me, you know, saying we have less snow than usual in winter could mean, okay, there's less overall precipitation, or the precipitation we've had, well, it was too warm, it came down as rain instead of snow. Has it been one or the other, or a mix of those two things?
Yeah, and you're exactly right with that. When we talk about the El Nino effects in Wisconsin, it's traditionally less snow than average. But if you think about it, our average high right now is 24 degrees. If the temperatures are milder than that, like they have been, you get a better snow to water ratio. Everybody knows that when you get a clipper system and it snows at 10 degrees, it takes a lot of daytime snow to try to accumulate. And we're going to, you know, tomorrow when it's 30, 31 degrees during the snow, it accumulates very quickly when those temperatures are milder. So on average, El Ninos not only give us a milder than normal pattern, but also typically less snowfall than average because of what you just mentioned, where we could have a little more rain, drizzle, and stuff like that as opposed to snowfall. But that doesn't mean we're not going to get cold snaps. It doesn't mean we're not going to get some pretty hefty amounts of snow. And both of those are going to all happen here within the next 7 days.
Talking to Chad Franzen, meteorologist at WSAW-TV in Wausau, about a mellow winter so far, higher than normal temperatures, less snow than normal, and now here comes the snow. So, Chad, you know, we've been watching over the last week as this thing develops. Give us the track of this snow. When is going to be hitting who and how?
All right. Right now, the storm track is coming out of the Central Plains states. This started off as a low pressure system developed on the Front Range of the Rockies, and it has been producing some pretty hefty amounts of snow in northwestern Iowa, southeastern South Dakota, and kind of a rain snow mix around places like Omaha, Nebraska. This storm system has some Gulf moisture to work with, and the track of the low pressure system will be on a line such that it'll move basically through northern Illinois, far southeastern Wisconsin. And with us, with that kind of moisture, and we're on the north side of this, that gives us a colder wind and therefore mostly a snow event. And it is going to turn very windy as this system approaches overnight tonight, and especially throughout the day tomorrow, and the wind direction will shift back to the northeast, and that'll cause some blowing and drifting. As far as the startup, it'll come in southwest to northeast across the state of Wisconsin, arriving just around midnight in the southwestern part of Wisconsin, around especially in central Wisconsin, around Juneau and Adams counties, and then spread northeastward toward daybreak, right through Wausau and the Merrill area. And then the heaviest amount of snowfall will fall mainly between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. tomorrow. And then as the snow starts to wind down, we'll get those gusty northeast winds really kicking in. And then it's going to cause some blowing and drifting for Tuesday night into Wednesday morning. Snowfall totals expected for a good portion of central Wisconsin, mainly that 3 to 5 inch range. But once you get a little closer to Shawano and especially down toward Waupaca, you could get closer to 7 to 8, because there will be some enhancement coming off of Lake Michigan as well. But a good portion of the area will be about 3 to 5 with slightly heavier amounts east and south.
So 3 to 5 isn't exactly an epic, you know, blizzard. But Chad, you mentioned the snow and that wind as a combo. When we're out driving, that's still pretty bad.
It is, and you've got communities that are doing some brining right now in preparation for the snowfall coming in. And when you have this snow, and it's going to fall in about 31, 32 degrees temperature-wise, and we're going to hover near that for most of the day. So some of the blacktop surfaces will fare a little better because of their ability to hold in some heat initially. But as we get into that time frame for tomorrow night, the front comes through. The snow will start winding down, but that wind direction will shift, and then you start getting into what we would say a drier snow content. Humidity values will drop, and that's when you get into the blowing and drifting type snow, and wind gusts could exceed 30 miles per hour and get close to 40 by the time we get around to just before daybreak Wednesday. So I think road conditions will be okay during the daytime because visibility, while reduced, it's still daylight. It's those nighttime hours in particular, and especially the late night hours, where you really have some problems with blowing and drifting, and especially on less traveled roads where they may only get plowed once, and that blowing and drifting just moves back over early Wednesday morning. So that'll be the big concern with this storm system, is more so the road conditions as we get that 3 to 5 inches for most areas. And again, as you mentioned, 3 to 5 inches in past years isn't hardly what we consider a snowstorm, but this is the biggest one we've had so far this season.
And we've got a caller, Karen, who wanted to know, Chad, about global warming as a factor in determining, you know, warmer winters and snowfall. I know we've got El Ninos and La Ninas and polar vortexes and stuff. How does global warming fit into all of that when it determines what kind of winter we're going to have?
Well, in the past, you go back to hundreds of years, right? And we have the written record for the last good 150 years of weather record and keeping in that such. The biggest thing about the any kind of a climate change is what the end result is and what the effects are within not only this country, but all across the globe. So for this system and this kind of an El Nino versus La Nina, we get those pretty much every other year. It's going to be one or the other. So the climate change, when you're talking about the globe and the Earth as a whole, when those kind of systems are happening, such as like this one coming up from the Southwest, the El Nino and La Nina type conditions really don't have much of a factor in what we consider global climate change. Because if you look at the written history, we've had these El Nino and La Nina type events. Now, having said that, you take those out. Let's talk about what's going on with the world. The Earth is warming up. I mean, we're coming out of a mini ice age. So as these warmer patterns happen and the warmer temperatures happen, weather patterns will change. So in the long term, yes, things are warming up. We are starting to see some of the areas that were maybe not as warm as they used to be are not as warm as they were, now getting warmer than normal. And that's kind of where we are on the global scale, is that temperatures are slowly ticking upward in the overall scheme of things. In Wisconsin, just like an El Nino type season like we have right now, that means some slightly warmer than normal conditions. But again, that doesn't mean we're not going to get cold and snow. It's just that we're looking at some slightly warmer normal conditions that have moved in and across in this, let's say, context for this country. And that's where we're having some of these milder and warmer than normal winters. But on the flip side of that, El Nino and La Nina can really override and secede that. If you think back to 2019, we had a bitterly cold month of February, and that's where we had so many temperatures below zero for almost 3 weeks straight.
Chad, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Anytime.
That's Chad Fradzin, meteorologist for WSAW-TV in Wausau, with us today to explain why Wisconsin hasn't seen much snow and ice this winter and what to expect with a big storm on the way for a lot of the state starting at midnight. Coming up, we'll learn how the lack of winter weather has affected outdoor recreation and tourism in the state and whether this coming forecast might help things out. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have an outdoor winter activity that you haven't been able to activate so much this year? Do you work in tourism in an area that relies on skiing and snowmobiling and ice castles and other winter activities? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We just heard from a meteorologist about why Wisconsin hasn't had a lot of snow this year and what to expect with the storm coming over the next couple days. Now we're turning our attention to outdoor recreation and tourism and how they're managing without a lot of snow or ice cover so far. You could join in at 800-642-1234. As this has been a down year for your snow-related activities, whatever they may be, do you live in a part of the state that depends on snowy weather and ice-covered lakes for tourism? How are things going? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Keith Oleg is regional features writer for the Green Bay Press-Gazette. He wrote recent stories about the lack of snow and ice in the state affecting snowmobilers, ice fishing, and other outdoor activities. Keith, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi. Thanks, Rob. Thanks now, for having me.
You write about these issues, Keith. It's also personal for you because you write that you like to do a lot of this stuff. For you personally, how's it been going with outdoor activities this winter?
Well, on one side of the coin, it's easy. I tend to go out. I don't tend. I go out every day and do some sort of recreational exercise, mostly silent sports. So running's been good. I've been riding a bike a lot, and a lot of my cycling friends are getting in a lot of miles. I live in Wausau. I work in Green Bay, but I live in Wausau, and I've gotten some ice skating in the past couple of weeks, but big time. Money-wise, big-time recreational sports have been taking a hit, like snowmobiling, ice fishing in the south, and other, sort of the motorized sports. They're really hurting right now.
Yeah, talking about running and cycling in early January, that's not exactly what people are looking for. Now, you kind of called around, you talked to some outdoor recreation people. Let's start with those motorsports, the snowmobiling. What are you hearing from people who count on that?
Well, so I called up to the snow capital of Wisconsin, Hurley. There are hundreds of miles of snowmobiling trails up there, and it's not going on. None of them are open. So I spoke with Jackie Widower. She is the director of the Hurley Area Chamber of Commerce, and they are asking people to kind of consider pivoting. They also have ATV and UTV, trails up there, and, those are open as long as it's cold enough. So it's been warm. If it's above freezing, then those trails shut down. And then I also spoke to the Eagle River Chamber of Commerce. That's the snowmobile capital of the world. And they too, Kim Emerson, the executive director of the Eagle River Chamber of Commerce, said that their snowmobile trails have been shut down, and some of the snowmobile events, such as the racing, I guess there was like a classic snowmobile race that was scheduled for last weekend, that is was postponed. They hope to hold that later. But Kim said that people are ice fishing up there. So both of those women were saying there's a lot of hope out there too. And maybe with this snowstorm and this cold snap, those trails will get open and people will get up there and snowmobile, spend their money.
Now let's talk about some skiing, Keith. Now I know our own Danielle Kading reported that the Birkebeiner, they're working on making as much snow as they can, hopefully to have an event on schedule. What are you hearing in the world of cross-country skiing in the state?
I've been less connected that way, but I'm just sort of like watching from afar, and it sounds as if their man-made snowmobiling, or I'm sorry, their man-made snowmaking facilities are on point. And I think, you know, a section of the trail is open, and I just saw a picture this morning. They had some snow up there, so things look white too. It always seems weird to me when I see like a cross-country skier skiing through brown on a band of white. So they at least have a white landscape. It looks fantastic.
Talking to Keith Ulig, regional features writer for the Green Bay Press Gazette, talking about some difficulties for the winter recreation world here in Wisconsin with the mild and low snow winter so far, though maybe some snow will come along and save the day over this next couple of days. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Keith, you also mentioned lakes. I understand, you know, if you go far enough north, you're going to find some frozen lakes to skate on like you did and to fish on. But it's not a normal season so far for a lot of the state. What are you seeing?
Colleague Paul Smith down in Milwaukee wrote a piece that ran on January 4th. And boy, it looks like swimming might be your option if you live down in Milwaukee and Madison, or at least it has been up until now. I know there's some surfing going on. I keep in contact with some folks through social media, and they've been surfing off of the coast of Kenosha. But, you know, Rob, that's the beach area of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. So maybe, hopefully that'll get those folks going too as the cold snaps in.
Now you talk to people who, as you mentioned, who own businesses related to this. How worried are they? How big a hit is this? Or are they feel like, okay, snow is going to come, we're going to be okay?
I think it's more the more snows are going to come and we're going to be okay. Both of those people from the chamber said they weren't panicking. They had a good, strong, busy Christmas season, they said, you know, because a lot of people had made plans to go up there, like Eagle River and Hurley, for Christmas. You know, they just didn't take their snowmobiles this season. But I think if it hangs around for very long, that's when if the warmth hangs around for very long, that's when they're really going to start to see a bite into the economy.
Now, your fellow Wausauite, Chad Franzen, was telling us about this snow coming. If it does come to fruition, Keith, what's at the top of your list? Snowmen, snow angels, skiing, what are you going to do?
Nordic skiing, man. Nordic skiing. I've been just aching to go Nordic skiing.
All right, and are there good places, or what are your favorite places to do around Wausau?
Wausau has a couple of great spots. 9 Mile County Forest and Recreation Area is the main skiing area. They've opened some trails on an area golf course. And sometimes I'll just go out like on the Wisconsin River or some of the other lakes. If we don't get enough snow to groom trails, I'll just sort of bushwhack. But that's pretty tricky, you know, with the warmth. You don't want to – no ice is safe ice, so you got to be really careful about that.
And then I want to get back where we started, Keith. You have, you wrote on your pieces, I think, some safety advice to share for people who are biking in the winter when there isn't a lot of snow. You had a little, little incident.
Yeah, I've crashed a few times so far this year. The problem has been it's been hovering around the freezing point. And it's like in one ride in particular, the pavement was fine. Like Chad said, it seems to hold the heat a little bit better. And I just turned a corner and it was like glare ice. And I took a tumble. I don't have any safety tips other than just go slow, be careful, and sort of be aware that that's a huge possibility. I just have to go out, though. You know, I can't do... Wisconsin winters, I've got to do something in order to, you know, kind of get through this dark season. And the only way I've found the best way is to just get outside. So I'll take the risk.
Hey, we got a caller with, I think, a couple of ways to do that. Just briefly, Jack is with us in Madison. Jack, what are you missing this winter or doing this winter?
Hi, Rob. Well, you know, in terms of what I'm missing, I think we can agree we've missed a good month of snow and ice for, you know, skiing, you know, both cross country and downhill, but also pond hockey, which I like to do on a nice frozen lake or ice patch. And I wondered what insight your guests might have as to how many more winters we can have where we will be able to do all that, you know, starting in December or so, and hopefully not having to do it in January, but.
Jack, thanks a lot for the call. We'll give Jack the last word. Our meteorologist has already left us, but thanks for the call, Jack. And Keith, thanks a lot for sharing what you're seeing this winter.
All right. Thanks, Rob.
That's Keith Ullig, regional features writer for the Green Bay Press-Gazette. He's with us today to talk about how the outdoor recreation and tourism industries in the state are getting by with limited snowfall so far this winter. Earlier, we heard from meteorologist Chad Franzen about the weather trends behind the lack of snow and what's in store with the snowstorm coming. Yeah, pretty soon. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Perrin. Coming up, how should news media outlets cover the 2024 presidential election and the stakes of that election with former President Donald Trump as a candidate in particular? We'll talk to a journalist and media critic about what he's seeing and reading so far. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a poem about coming together despite differences.
Sports have a special way of bringing a diverse group of people together, even if the fans aren't rooting for the same team. Dr. Arif Ahmed reflects on a cricket tournament in Madison where the pregame jitters were high. It wasn't necessarily because of the game itself, but because of the countries many of the players came from, India and Pakistan. The writer and cardiologist shares a poem about that day.
32 expatriates, Pakistanis and Indians, against a nuclear standoff. March 2019. For Pakistanis and Indians everywhere and in the U.S., in a week of seesaw diplomacy and unsettling war games, I am nervous. An ongoing cricket tournament in Madison, Wisconsin, USA, where Indians and Pakistanis mix up and play. Though I was nervous with more questions than answers, more doubts than convictions. Not for the game, but for the gamesmanship. Would we still come together to play or cancel and stay in our respective bubbles? And just like that, the night came and passed. We did gather and play, all trying and going out of their way to be more gracious, more generous, acutely aware of our global citizenship, this one big mother village, our interdependence, 32 expatriates, Pakistanis and Indians, against the odds, playing cricket over war, choosing team play, and maintaining discourse. Talking with a bat and a ball, we played for peace, yes, peace for all.
Dr. Arif Ahmed of Madison shared that writing about finding harmony through a game of cricket in Madison. After recording his poem, he told me a bit more about his love of cricket.
Well, growing up, this is a sport which has been around the longest. And you know who taught us cricket? the English. When British ruled over subcontinent India and Pakistan, they brought cricket with, and that's how they taught us cricket.
What do you love about the sport?
It's a good sport. It's a fair sport. It gives you a good balance. It's a, it's an English version of baseball, and I just like it. I never thought about why I loved it. Yeah, this is the first time I'm thinking about why do I love cricket? Well, I just like it.
So can you talk about the day of this cricket tournament and why it inspired you to write this poem?
So this was a time of a tense standoff between India and Pakistan, who are both neighbors and both are nuclear armed. And we were playing this tournament here, and it was a tense time. It was all over the international news because these two nuclear armed nations are at each other's throat and not backing off. So that's when this piece came about. And the more I think about it, the more I realize that religion, race, region, how can we fight over these things which we don't choose but are born into? And another important concept which I bring out is peace for all. You know, it's a very basic, just like a good air, good quality water. Peace for all is a very basic human need.
Dr. Arif Ahmed is a writer and cardiologist from Madison. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
This is Central Time. We're a week away from the Iowa Republican Caucus, the first formal event on this year's presidential election year political calendar. Former President Donald Trump was in Iowa over the weekend giving speeches at two events. On January 6th, 3 years after hundreds of his supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol in a violent effort to block the certification of his 2020 election loss. President Joe Biden spent his first campaign event this weekend near Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, starkly framing what he sees as the stakes of the 2024 election.
Just one day before January 6th. A date forever shared in our memory because it was on that day that we nearly lost America, lost it all. Today, we're here to answer the most important of questions. Is democracy still America's sacred cause? I mean it.
Our next guest says the media needs to rethink the way it's been covering political campaigns and highlight the stakes in the 2024 election. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How well do you think news outlets have been covering the election campaign so far? Is there something about former President Trump that requires, you think, a different kind of media coverage of his statements, his speeches, and more? Join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on political information and covering political misinformation as well. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dan Frumkin has had a three-decade career in journalism, serving as the senior Washington correspondent and bureau chief for the Huffington Post, as editor of WashingtonPost.com, and as deputy editor of NeimanWatchdog.org. He founded and currently edits the political journalism intervention website, PressWatch, online at PressWatchers.org. Dan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, Rob. I'm happy to be here.
We're in a new year. The election season is officially kicking off soon. You've been watching political coverage, critiquing political coverage for a long time. Sum up what you see as the state of political media at this critical moment.
Well, I think, you know, the important thing to keep in mind is this is not a normal candidate. It's not a normal campaign. It's not a normal election. And the normal coverage rule, the good news from my perspective is that I've sensed a bit of a tonal shift in the output of our major news organizations. Since Trump referred to his political enemies as vermin who need to be rooted out, And also after he talked about immigrants poisoning the blood of the country. These are the words of a real authoritarian person. These are words that are redolent with the fascists of the 20th century. And I think the coverage has gotten less both sidesy. What I mean by that is that typically, you know, in political journalism, it's been a safe bet that you say, here's what one candidate says, here's what the other candidate says, and you decide. They were operating within a sphere of normality where they were arguing about things that were arguable, not about facts. Now we have, you know, a candidate who tried to steal the presidency the last time around, who lies about it, whose whole campaign really is based on retribution for the alleged act of his being stolen, you know, his having the presidency stolen away from him. And I think that the coverage needs to be much clearer about how these two candidates are coming from very different relationships with the truth, and how reporters probably need to take sides in a way that they're not entirely comfortable doing.
Now, Dan, some people listening, when you say that former President Trump is a different type of candidate that requires a different type of coverage, they're agreeing with you absolutely. Other people might be thinking, well, you know, he talks differently. He's got a big mouth maybe, but at core, he's a politician who, you know, takes political stances, isn't really that different. Speak to that second group. Try to make that case to bring him on board with your concept.
Yeah, I mean, I think I come to this from a journalist perspective. I'm interested in who's telling me the truth, who's operating in good faith. I'm not looking at it as a partisan saying what party do I prefer. I'm looking at a president who's basing his whole campaign on this central lie that he won in 2020 when he obviously did not. There is huge amounts of incontrovertible evidence that he lost the 2020 election. And to be suggesting that that's not true offends me as a journalist. And I think it ought to offend anybody who cares about the truth. Similarly, he's facing, you know, these 91 felony counts of very serious crimes that would probably have gotten anybody thrown into prison by now, anybody else. And I think that he's also advocating for a kind of divisiveness and that's really inimical to the American tradition. I mean, he's talking about dividing immigrants from citizens and this talk about poisoning the blood is really dangerous and strikes me as very un-American.
Let's talk about what this kind of media coverage could look like. We've had, you know, people worry about horse race journalism when we talk about the polls. Maybe a more substantive type of journalism is, okay, the Republican says this about this issue, the Democrat says this about this issue. You're looking for something different than both of those. What would you like to see?
Well, mostly what I think we should be focusing on is how would these people govern differently? I don't think, you know, saying reporting every single day, rehashing the facts of the 2020 election is going to be particularly compelling. But you can look at what these people are saying they're going to do and what from their record they have already done. And in particular, looking at the stakes around democracy and around this notion that votes matter, that people ought to vote, that people's votes ought to be taken seriously. And I just sort of think that there's a wonderful phrase that has been coined by a journalism professor named Jay Rosen, which is report about the stakes, not the odds. So write about what is at stake, not just what they're saying and who said what and what have you, especially when some of what is being said is lies.
We're talking to a longtime journalist, now current media critic, Dan Frumkin, founder and editor of PressWatchers.org. We're talking to Dan about the job he thinks the news media have done and should do, covering former President Donald Trump's campaign in particular, hopes he has for 2024 campaign coverage. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for our guests? Which news outlets do you think are doing a great, good, okay, terrible job covering this election season? What do you want out of the media, whichever media you follow when it comes to covering this presidential campaign. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Dan Frumkin stays with us, founder and editor of PressWatchers.org. He has advice for the political media when it comes to 2024 presidential election coverage. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Yordis is with us in Colfax. Yordis, hi.
Hi. I think he should be treated as an unhinged man, a mentally disturbed personality, and that there should be more investigative journalism using history professors and people that have knowledge of dictatorships around the world to sort of inform people about these dangers. It's like a cult that is around Trump, and maybe some news organizations could talk about the elements of a cult and how this is very similar and very, very dangerous.
Yordis, thanks for the call. Dan Yordis offering a few different, I guess you could call them frames for ways to cover former President Trump. Your thoughts on what she had to say?
I think she's absolutely right. I think historians right now are extremely important people for journalists to be talking to, especially those who have experience with authoritarian regimes, with them coming into power and holding power and on occasion losing power. There are several who are now getting a lot more attention from journalists because what they can do is they can provide this frame where you can see that a lot of what Donald Trump is doing is right out of the authoritarian playbook when it comes to attacking the press or threatening political opponents or attacking companies that do him wrong. I mean, a lot of this can be seen almost most clearly by historians.
Thanks for that call, Yordis. Tom joins us now in Madison. Tom, hi.
Well, hello. I was wondering, I have a friend who told me about 2,000 Mules by Dinesh D'Souza, a video, and I guess it's a book, that shows how the election was stolen from Trump. What is your reaction to that? Have you heard of it? And could you react to that?
Tom, thanks for the call. Oh, go ahead, Dan. Yeah.
No. I mean, I've heard of it. It's a famous article in the sort of conspiracy theory arsenal. It's all untrue. It's been debunked many, many times by actual journalists who are doing actual journalism. The election was not stolen. I know it's hard sometimes for journalists to say that for risk of offending folks who don't believe it. But that's, you know, our job is to stick with the truth, whether or not it offends people.
Thanks for the call, Tom. And that brings up a couple points, Dan. We've seen over the last, 20 years or so, the rise of fact-checking, either in independent institutions, within particular news outlets as well. Do fact-checking efforts like that matter? Do you see them making a difference?
I mean, I admire the theory behind fact-checking and the people who do it. But no, I think it's been a disaster. And I think part of it is because what's happened is over the years, as lies have become more and more central to our politics, journalists thought fact-checking took care of it, so they didn't need to do it in their main story. So they'd still write a main story just like they used to. This person says that person says this, you decide. And then a few days later, there's a fact check saying, well, actually, this person was wrong and this person was right. I think what we need right now is fact checking in the main story. I think sometimes the lying is the most important story. There is a thing in journalism called the truth sandwich, which suggests that when you have to write about something that's a lie, you don't repeat the lie initially. You first state the truth, then you repeat the lie, and then you explain why the lie is not true. So that kind of coverage as the main story is, I think, is essential. Fact-checking, unfortunately, I think has been a distraction from that.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Chris is with us now in Fairchild. Hi, Chris.
Hi. First off, I second the guest's motion here of having responsible reporting, and I would like to believe that that's incumbent upon all reporters to do such a job that is representative of them by telling the truth. But just second to that, I would like to add that it is responsible upon the consumer of such information to be civically engaged, and the consumer also has some responsibility, if you will, to be engaged and to at least have some basis, in fact, to when they hear these stories, to make a reasonable inference.
Chris, thanks for the call. Dan?
Yeah, I mean, if I could change one thing with the magic wand, it would be to make everybody who consumes the media more critical, more skeptical of what they're hearing, and to demand to know the underpinnings of what they're being told and what they're reading. I think an informed electorate is not simply taking in stuff and accepting it as it is. It's digesting it and making sense of it. And I hope we have a resurgence of that kind of critical reading and civic literacy.
Chris, thanks for the call. Dan, one big question, even if the mainstream media, however we want to define that, does everything you're hoping for, we seem to have a separate alternative media infrastructure ecosystem where, say, a tweet might go out and then Washington Post reported the Gateway Pundit picks it up and then One America News runs it with it from there. And a news consumer can have all of that and not care whether the Washington Post or New York Times or their local paper is getting things right.
Yeah, no, that's a tremendous challenge for people, you know, for reality-based journalists everywhere, is that there's this huge ecosystem that's pumping disinformation and misinformation into the political sphere. There's no easy answer to that. One answer, though, is to radically report and yell out the truth and do it as energetically and as entertainingly as the folks at places like Newsmax and One America News and Gateway Pundit. I think that we need to take joy in pointing out when they are misleading people, just like they take joy in misleading people.
And Dan, in just our last half a minute or so, do you feel optimistic that the media can get it right in 2024?
Yes and no. I used to think this was a generational challenge and wasn't gonna get solved for many years. But I'm seeing resistance within the newsrooms themselves, even. People who are doing great work in investigative and international coverage and other areas like that, I think are getting a little bit fed up with the political coverage that just sort of tries to split the difference between two things that are not equal.
Dan, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Dan Frumkin, founder and editor of PressWatchers.org. We talked to him today about how he thinks the news media are doing covering former President Trump's campaign for a second term and his hopes for coverage of the 2024 presidential race. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, how about school with no grades? Find out why a Wisconsin district is at least experimenting with a plan to try getting rid of letter grades, what it could mean for kids along the way. And the U.S.-Mexico border is getting a lot of attention as an election year kicks off. We'll find out what's actually happening at the border and the options available for the White House and for Congress. You can get us started right now on either of those topics with your questions for our guests or your thoughts. You can email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Or send us a message via the Ideas Network Facebook page. Then you can join those conversations tomorrow and call in while they're happening in real time as well. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.